Good morning. It's good to be here. Heard some good things about the teaching and the preaching last week. Thankful for that. Try to get a chance to listen to those later this week. Betsy and I were outside of Decatur, Alabama for the week from Sunday through Wednesday. I preached for the old Moulton Road Church. There were 20 of us last Sunday morning, so counting Betsy and I and another couple I know were visiting. Made about 16 of them. I held a meeting there right before we moved here back in 2010. Bobby Graham preaches for them. He and Karen have been there, I think, about 18 to 20 years. Bobby and his wife are good folks. They've lived in North Alabama most of their life. He has taught at Athens Bible School, I think, since the 1960s, and has preached at a variety of various churches in that area without having to physically move very much. I think I have a couple times. They have three children. They're all faithful. Their two daughters are married to men who preach. Just encouraging, as we stayed with them in Athens and drove about 40 minutes out to where the meeting place was. It's a little west of Decatur. It's an older group. Betsy and I were probably the youngest folks there. We had 16 on Wednesday night. I think maybe 27 on Sunday afternoon. They had a singing service and then moved up their evening service. And then Monday and Tuesday night, probably about the same. They're in a place where it's hard to grow, and they have to deal with what other churches deal with in other areas sometimes. There's bigger churches in the area with younger families and kids, and anybody that moves in the area, they seem to be drawn to where the kids are and the young couples and the young people, and so they have a hard time getting those. In fact, one of the elders' family with three boys decided to go to meet with one of those groups. So just have a hard time growing out that way, and just even talked about merging with some other groups and having that discussion. But I appreciated it. It seemed like they enjoyed the week. There were some, I think, all genuine, I hope, but some especially appreciated what we did together and was helpful to them, I hope. One of my heroes is a member there. I remembered Avery. Avery Gold is his name. And several years ago, many years ago, Avery's probably in his 70s now, maybe up in the high 70s. His wife left him years ago, and he lived single. And towards the end of her life, she acknowledged her sins and became a member of the church there again. They didn't marry, but in her latter life, when her health was poor, he made sure she was taken care of. And I'm going to use that as a segue into a lesson on love. That, to me, was an example of him making sure she was cared for even after she had left him many years before. One other story I want to share, and if you read the email I sent out just yesterday, kind of late, got to visit with a couple on Tuesday night afterwards that weren't members there, but heard a story that I just want to tell you to encourage you to never know the good that you may do. Visit with this young woman, and she was telling me her name. It's the first Larry that I've ever met who was a woman. Spelled L-A-R-I, but spelled, pronounced Larry. She was telling me that in high school, she was raised in the Methodist denomination. She began to have questions about what she was hearing. One of her classmates, a good friend in high school, while they were in high school together, invited her to come and meet with him and the group that his father preached for. And eventually there were some Bible studies. She obeyed the gospel. Since then, after that, her mother obeyed the gospel. After that, her brother obeyed the gospel. And it's not been too long ago that her 95-year-old grandfather decided to obey the gospel just shortly before he passed away. So who knows? When you invite someone to study, come and worship together, what that might lead to. So let's do that this week. Find somebody to invite to come and study with us. Maybe even study with yourself and lead them to Jesus Christ. So we're grateful to be back home. And enjoyed being with our kids a little bit a couple days before that. So thankful to be able to have that time with them. 1 Corinthians 13. Love is not something we fall in or out of. Love is not something we make. It's certainly not lust. It's an Old Testament story in 2 Samuel 13 that teaches us that very candidly. When Ammon longed for his sister, half-sister Tamar, it says he loved her. And then after he raped her and she wanted, the text says that he hated her more than he had loved her before. There's an old rock, classic rock song says that what I thought was love must have been lust. That's not what it is. Love is not what 16-year-olds, boy and girlfriend say to each other. Love is not first what we feel. Certainly we have relationships that there is to be feelings of love differently, different kinds than what we see expressed in this chapter. Love is not having certain gifts or abilities. It wasn't about speaking in tongues. It wasn't about having gifts or abilities of which we can boast and brag about, be proud of. Love wasn't having all of the answers to all of the questions. Love wasn't studying the Bible for sermons, preparing to teach Bible classes. Love wasn't studying the Bible to prepare for a debate. Love wasn't studying the Bible to be able to answer the questions in Bible class. Love wasn't filling in the blanks. Love wasn't having the faith that believes that mountains can be moved. Love wasn't having the faith that I'm going to implement and work towards great goals that I have, goals that may be attainable with strong faith, individually or congregationally. But I can have all of that and not have love. Love is not being willing to give the shirt off my back. Can't tell you how often I've heard some people described as being willing to give you the shirt off their back. And yet I don't think of them when I read this chapter. Love's not that. Sometimes we may even try to cover our hate, our rudeness, our selfishness, and our pride with good works. It's not love. Love is not the willingness to die a martyr for the cause. I wonder how many Christians in the first century died at the hands of the Jews or the Romans and died lost. How many of them died no better off, whose life had been of no more profit than those who died who were not Christians? By the way, I sure hope Stephen in Acts 7, James in Acts 12, and Antipas in Revelation 2 died as martyrs, but died in the Lord. I'm given hope for all of those men. Stephen certainly demonstrated some of the aspects of love that we'll read about here today when he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." He certainly had a forgiving spirit. Antipas is described as a faithful martyr. And you can't be faithful without love. What is love? Love is the most excellent way, Paul describes it, the end of chapter 12. In the beginning of chapter 14, it's the love that has to be pursued. You have to go after this. It doesn't find you, you find it. You have to make the choice. We have to make the decision to put these things into practice. Faith is something, love is something we add to our faith. 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 7. Love is the portrait of perfection. It's the picture of the perfection of New Testament teaching. Love is the mark of maturity in the life of a Christian. This is what a mature Christian looks like. 1 Corinthians 13. Love is the ultimate goal of the reformation of our character. We're putting off that old ugly man and putting on the new beautiful man the man of Christ. And as that old man gets put off and the new man gets put on, Paul said in Colossians 3, above all these things, everything he had just discussed, kindness and humbleness and meekness, forbearance, he said, put on love. Colossians 3:14. Love is an aspect of the fruit of the Spirit. And it includes many of the other aspects. It incorporates many of those other facets, Galatians 5. Love is the description of deity. God is love. Love is the very picture of God Himself, the very picture of His character, the very picture of His person. If you Googled, what is God, this chapter would come up first in heaven's search engine. God is love. Read the text with me this way. God is long-suffering. God is patient. God is kind. God is gracious. God does not envy. There are three persons in the Godhead, and none of them envy the role of the others. The Son doesn't envy the role of the Father. The Father doesn't envy the role of the Son. I don't think the Father has one problem with the fact that His Son's getting all this attention from us because He's the one that died on the cross. It doesn't bother Him at all. It's part of His plan. The Father, Jesus, is not offended by the success of the Holy Spirit in revealing the Scriptures to the apostles and performing the miracles in the lives of those who preach the Word. There's no envy in the Godhead. No envy of what others have done. God does not parade Himself. God is not puffed up. God doesn't blow His own horn. The only time you will find God getting the I am God card out is when He absolutely has to. When He's been questioned about His authority and His power. And then He gets the card out and says, I am God. As He told Habakkuk and He told Job. God has never behaved badly. Has never behaved rudely. God's not seeking His own. God is the most selfless being, person in the universe. He's not easily provoked. If He was, all of us would have been wiped out on this world a long time ago. It takes Him a long time to finally get to the point where He says, enough's enough. Sometimes hundreds of years. God keeps no account of the wrongs done to Him. I don't believe at the judgment you and I will give account for the sins that we've committed if they've been forgiven. It won't be a time we'll stand before the Lord and the Lord says, okay, Lee, here we go. We're going to start with you when you were about, wherever I can go back to. You remember that cuss word you said while you were on the lawnmower and you're about 10 years old? Let's start right there. How about that? I don't have to hear all of that. He's forgotten it. I give no account of those things by the grace of God, by His forgiveness. He keeps no account. He's not sitting around thinking about all of that. He's not sitting around with the rest of everybody else in the Godhead talking about what everybody's done to Him. God keeps no account of wrongs. He doesn't rejoice in iniquity, and please make sure this is not the only point you get today, but it is there. He doesn't rejoice in sin. He doesn't rejoice in lawlessness. He takes no pleasure in those who live according to their own dictates and not His own. When we act like there's no law, when we act like we're above the law, or we pay no attention to His rule, He takes no pleasure in that. But He does rejoice in truth. He rejoices in the fact that His children walk in truth. And He bears all things. He carries our load with Him. He goes the extra mile to carry the load of others. He's even willing to suffer if it means that others will benefit. He believes all things. He hopes all things. God hopes the best. anticipates people changing. In one of the parables of Jesus, Jesus taught that. The parable was to demonstrate that the Jewish people had killed all of the prophets that had been, or persecuted and killed some of the prophets that had been sent. But then in the parable, the landowner says, I'll send my son. Surely they'll respect him. And I see a God in heaven who, while I know, knew what would happen, still had a heart that said, surely my people will accept him and receive him as king. He hopes the best. He endures all things. He endures persecutions for the good of others. And he never fails, not once. God is love. And we see that in the character of Christ. When you study about Jesus in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, be aware of the fact that Jesus never did one thing at any time that violated any of the principles found in 1 Corinthians 13. He was the living personification of 1 Corinthians 13. God is love. Jesus is God. Jesus demonstrated what love looks like in the flesh. Nothing he ever did. Nothing. Nothing he ever said, ever acted, in any of the answers he gave was contrary to this chapter. There are other things the scriptures talk about love besides this chapter. In Romans 13, love works no ill towards his neighbor. The greatest thing a citizen in any country can do is be a good neighbor. Best thing you can do without any question. Seeks no harm of his neighbor. Love blesses. Love prays for. And love does good to an enemy. Which tells me this is not always a feeling. Again, a love of the will when I decide that's what I'm going to do with God. Love is seeing what we do more than what we say. That doesn't mean we shouldn't say it, especially in the home. Doesn't mean we shouldn't say it to one another. Paul told his brethren when he wrote them, he said, I love you. He said that to the Corinthians after he was getting on to them pretty hardly. But it's in action. You can tell somebody you love them all day long, but will it be seen? Love covers a multitude of sins. That's God. 1 Peter 4 and verse 8. He forgives us of our sins. They're covered. They're gone. They're buried. And that's what we ought to do with one another. Love does chasten. God chastens us. Hebrews 12, 6. Jesus said to the church of Laodicea, I chasten those that I love. Love disciplines. Love corrects. Love punishes. A parent loves their children. A church loves their members. A government loves its citizens. It will chasten and correct and punish those who rejoice in iniquity. Love should absolutely be the motivation for everything we say and do. It should stand behind every word and every action. Love gives and love serves unselfishly and unceremoniously. What kind of husband would I be if I loved like 1 Corinthians 13 teaches? What kind of wife? What kind of parent would you be? What kind of child? What kind of worker in the workplace? What kind of neighbor? What kind of citizen? What kind of church member would all of us be if our love, our character was described by the love that's described in 1 Corinthians 13? Let's read this text one more time this morning. And I want you to read it with I, not me, you. I want you to listen and read it to yourself. And I want you to be thinking about yourself. If you're thinking about anybody else while I read this, then you've missed the point. Don't do that. Think about you. And listen to what Jesus says to us through Paul. I am long-suffering and patient. I am kind. I'm useful and gracious. I don't envy others. But in fact, I rejoice in their success and their abilities. I don't parade myself. I'm not puffed up. I don't blow my own horn. I don't boast of my humility. I rarely, if ever, get the I am card out. I rarely ever get out, I'm the head of this house, I'm the husband. I don't have to get that out. I rarely would ever have to get the I'm the dad here, listen to me card out. I'm the boss here, you don't have to get that card out either. Or I'm the Christian, no, leave that card in the deck. Just be what you ought to be. I don't behave rudely or badly. I don't seek my own. My own happiness is not what's important to me. A woman said that she came to realize she was in love with her husband when his happiness meant more to her than her own. That man ought to get on his knees and thank God he's married to a woman that says something like that. I'm not easily provoked. I don't blow up. I don't fly off the handle easily. I don't keep a track count of the wrongs done to me. You won't find me sitting among preachers talking about all the things that folks have done to me. I don't rejoice in iniquity. I do hate sin and lawlessness, but I rejoice in the truth, and the truth that includes this chapter. I rejoice in people who live like this. I bear all things. I'm willing to go the extra mile, and I may even be willing to do it in silence, to suffer in silence. I believe all things. I believe the best in others. I'm not suspicious. I still trust folks until I'm given every reason to believe otherwise. I'm not cynical. I hope all things. I hope there are better days to come for folks that I'm teaching. My life is not full of despair. I'm not giving up. There's still hope. People can still be taught. There's still good hearts. We can still change. I endure all things. I'm patient in trials. I don't ever give up. And I will never fail. I'll love them even when they don't love me, like this chapter describes. I'll love them anyway. Got some work to do, don't we? So do I.